Game on 2FM. With Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
And good evening from Damien O'Mara. You're very welcome to Game On. Thank you to Chris and Kira for the last couple of hours. Any night you get to crack a joke about a sausage on national radio with Chris Green is a good night. So a lot to come between now and 7 o'clock. Are we talking about green shoots at last? Lisa Fallon and David Connolly will be with us to look back on last night's action at the Aviva.
Collins Robinson into the penalty area. And it's goal! That's an own goal! Duffy's got to claim it, but sixes and sevens inside the penalty area, and the Aviva Stadium goes wild, and Republic of Ireland have drawn level.
As Leona Maguire returns home to Cavan, the good news keeps on coming for Irish golf. We're going to get details on the Open's return to Royal Port Rush.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Obviously, I've some great memories there, and I'm quite biased about it, but it was, it was an amazing venue and amazing tournament, and it's quite exciting that it's going back there and that I'm going to be involved in it. And something that I look forward to. It's not that far away, and it's just great that Port Rush is on the open road, and it's very exciting for everyone in Ireland.
We get the view from Brazil on the array of soccer talent being held back from Premier League action this weekend. While in Camogie, Aoife Murray and Aisling Connolly will preview Sunday's All-Ireland Finals.
Game on 2FM.
So you can text us about any of those stories or anything else of a sporting nature that's on your mind. Our number is 51552. You can tweet the programme as well. At Game On 2FM will get us. We're going to chat about the Ryder Cup selections, the Open Championship coming back to the island of Ireland and everything else in just a minute. But it's been a really, really busy day in sport for a Wednesday in the middle of September. Couple of stories jumping out from the RT Sport website in particular, or wherever else it is you might get your news. The Dublin County Board announcing earlier this afternoon that Matty Kenny has agreed to remain on as manager of the county's hurling team. I think an awful lot of us is expecting a managerial merry-go-round in the close season with various vacancies opening up. But Matty Kenny, it certainly will be spun that he's turning down the lure of his native Galway, but he's going to stay with Dublin, having guided them to a first Leinster final appearance in 7 years this summer. It's also widely reported this evening that Colm Bonner is in line to take over as the new Tipperary manager to replace Liam Sheedy. And one line of notable news in rugby, the IRFU chief executive Philip Brown is to step down from his role. He's to retire at the end of the current year. He joined the union back in 1992, he assumed the role of chief executive in 1998, helped to steer the union through the move from the amateur status to the professional era, and has been a key figure in the growth of the Celtic League and the Six Nations and everything else that has gone with us over the course of that time. So an interesting and notable departure from the IRFU. So a lot of stuff to get stuck into between now and 7 o'clock, and we're going to start with this.
Game on! Go!
So it has been a remarkably busy day for golf. Mentioned there that Leona Maguire's homecoming is taking place this evening in Cavan. We've got news of the Open Championship returning to Royal Port Rush. It'll be the host venue for 2025's edition of golf's oldest major. Shane Lowry, of course, winning the event there in 2019 when the major returned to the island of Ireland for the first time since 1951. The US Ryder Cup team is known as well after Captain Steve Stricker selected Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele, Harris English, Tony Fina, Daniel Berger and Scotty Scheffler as his wildcards for this month's match. They join the automatic qualifiers Colin Morikawa, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas and Patrick Cantlay. The European team will be finalised this coming Sunday after the BMW Championship this weekend. Patrick Harrington will name his wildcards. I think that's due to take place around 7:30, 8 o'clock on Sunday evening. So a lot to reflect upon, and former European Tour professional Raimi Burns joins is fresh from commentating for US Radio on the Solheim Cup. Raimi, how are you?
Good evening, Damien. How are you doing?
Not too bad. It's good to talk to you after quite some time. It's we've not caught up since the dust was settling on the Open Championship the last time it was in Royal Port Rush. This is great news, not just for golf on the island of Ireland, but it's a remarkably swift return for the Open to Port Rush, which possibly is an indication of how significant or the impact the staging a couple of years back had.
Yes, I think when in 2011 or 12, when it was being decided, I think they agreed on three Opens in 20 years. But for it to go back so quick is phenomenal. Phenomenal for Irish golf, phenomenal for this side of the Atlantic, especially what we've had happen over the last weekend with the Soilheim Cup and all the hype. But the Open, every Open has its own unique sort of venues. But Royal Port Rush just has, you know, the golf course is in the town. The people come to it. There's a train station there. It's beside the seaside. It's a real unique place, Royal Port Rush. It's probably one of the greatest Open venues as a golf course, a real difficult, difficult golf course. And the players just loved coming to it. And I think that played a big part. The staging of the golf tournament worked really well. They changed a few golf holes. And obviously the members of Royal Port Rush Golf Club to give up their golf course. And it doesn't happen, Damien. You just don't give the golf course up for the week, you know. There's 6 or 8 or a year in advance you have to get the golf course ready and get the grandstands ready. So it's just a phenomenal achievement for just a continuation of what's going on in Irish golf. It's just at a phenomenal level, the commitment even from amateur golfers playing the game. It's just filtering through into golf clubs throughout the country, and golf is roaring definitely in Ireland at the moment, and it's just great to see.
Now, you had the bird's eye view for Shane Lowry winning in 2019. You were the on-course commentator for the Open Championship Radio, which is their app and their own commentary team. So as Shane Lowry and Tommy Fleetwood made their way around on that final day, it was a raucous affair which was unlike any major or any Open that we had witnessed in the preceding years. And in many ways, is it fair to say that maybe Port Rush, the Irish crowd, everything that combined that weekend perhaps attracted maybe a younger crowd or gave a glimpse of what these golfing majors with their tradition can become in the entertainment era?
I think so. You know, we talk about the pandemic was great for golf within the country, but I think Shane winning the Open in Port Rush certainly cannonballed young people into the game here in this country, all over the country. People got out, young kids got out, fathers that maybe only played a little bit and mothers that maybe didn't play, just took an interest in the game, whether it was in the country or in the cities around Ireland. But certainly Shane has just leapfrogged golf into on a different planet, golf at the moment, to where it was previous to him winning that tournament. And the excitement and the camaraderie of people from all over the world, whether you're from Scotland, England, Ireland, Northern Ireland, wherever you're from, there's so many different nationalities at that Open, and they got to experience an Open unlike any other Open. I mean, I've done Carnoustie, I did with Tiger Woods in the final round with Molinari when he came close to winning, and there was an unbelievable atmosphere. But the atmosphere in Royal Port Rush was special. It was something that was different. It was, you know, it was just an incredible achievement, and the home crowd cheering him on. It was just like a football match between Barcelona and Real Madrid for 4 full days. It was non-stop, high-quality performance especially by Shane, the way he conducted himself and the way he went on to win, and also the way Tommy Fleetwood took second place. He was tremendous in that last group. The way he let Shane, you know, get all the graces at the end, and the way his family came on the green, and all the support that Shane had from family and friends in the run-up, you know, the 10 years previous or 12 years previous of his professional career. So it was just an amazing for the Open committee, and the chance they took at bringing the Open back to Northern Ireland. I think it was 1951, Max Faulkner won it the last time. So it was just tremendous, and it's just been Gary McNeil, who's the professional. I grew up with Gary, and he's the professional Royal Port Rush. I was speaking to him earlier on, and they're just so excited. A few more years, 2025, Open Championship back to Port Rush. Then at Derry Manor, we have the Ryder Cup in 2027. So it's just the next 5 or 6 years, but we've some great, phenomenal golf. The biggest golf staging tournaments in the world to look forward to. It's just so exciting.
Can I just talk to you about the impact for Northern Ireland in particular? Because I know you've spoken about this in the past. For a blatant plug for something that Greg Allen and I made a couple of years ago, you were kind enough to give us plenty of your time for a documentary we made for Radio 1 about Shane's success that time. But it struck me, listening to that, you know, there's an added significance for Northern Ireland because of the perception of Northern Ireland internationally, that it was a really big deal for Northern Ireland to see a major sporting event, particularly one which is so associated with Great Britain, to come back to the island. It was a great maybe indicator of the new Northern Ireland, a great boost to the work that has gone up there in recent years. And that's probably been justified again with the return of the Open at such quick succession.
Yeah, I mean, suppose you can get political about it. I mean, I grew up in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland's had its troubles and sort of separation with religions, etc. But golf has always been a huge part of culture in Northern Ireland. You have the Royal County Downs, you have the Ardglass Golf Clubs, you have Castle Rocks, Royal Port Roche, Royal Port Stewart. I could keep going on and on. There's so many great golf courses. It's produced so many great players over the years. And these golf courses are, you know, these are like Monet's. These are, you know, like an equivalent to oil prints. These are special, sacred grounds of land that has been built 100, 125 years ago. And we all knew we had the greatest golf courses possibly in the island of Ireland. And to get a golf tournament staged was such an excitement, such an exciting thing for, you want to call it the new Northern Ireland or whatever, or the old Northern Ireland, whatever. But it just to bring people together, bring a tournament together. The Northern Ireland Tourist Board has done tremendous in trying to promote the game of golf around the whole country. And it's just phenomenal that the way it was staged and the winner, Shane Lowry, coming through down under pressure the whole way through the Saturday before, shooting a 63. It was I never seen an atmosphere anywhere in the world. I never witnessed there being some great sporting events around the world. Tiger winning in 2008 in Torrey Pines. I never seen anything like it, or World Cup matches and finals. But this was just special. And it's just a great testament to what has gone on over the last few years in golf. And golf is so united with the Golfing Union of Ireland now coming as Golf Ireland, and the women's and the men's golf getting together. The whole package just seems to be coming together for golf. And hopefully that will grow some new people and lots of new people, whether they're never going to be low handicaps or higher handicaps, but people who can come and enjoy this wonderful game. And and hopefully in 2025, we'll have a new champion, whether it's a new Irish golfer coming through, or Shane Lowry again, or Rory McIlroy again. But it's just phenomenal what has happened and what has went on in golf in the north of Ireland and Ireland. And I hope it continues. And this is they're all in ancient. And as you say, the members are all Pádraig Roche and the Northern Ireland Assembly to agree on putting this together. It's just incredible. And I'm looking forward to what it brings. And what it brings to the economy, Damien, it doesn't just bring the Open, but it brings people in from other sides of the globe to come and play the wonderful, you know, Ross's Point or Lahinch or Belly Bunions and make their way up to the Open. So for the economy as a whole, it brings hundreds and hundreds of millions of euros into the economy on a worldwide stage. And especially the photographs that go around the world to the Golf Channel, the NBC Sports, Asian TV, Australian TV. It's just incredible. And as we all know, the Open is the biggest golf championship in the world, individual. The Ryder Cup, the Solheim Cup may be the biggest in team events, but it's just incredible, and long may it continue. Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned the Solheim Cup, which we'll come to in a second, but the Ryder Cup. So I mentioned the wildcard selections there. We look at maybe the top 15 players, the automatic qualifiers, and then the ones that were chasing after them. Patrick Reed has been very open with his battle with pneumonia in recent weeks, and it was widely considered for the last couple of weeks that he wasn't going to be available for selection, as has proven to be the case. So realistically, of Steve Stricker's selections, Webb Simpson is really the big man to lose out. Everything else is pretty much in line with what people would have expected.
I mean, he's got, I think the 21 is the worst in the world ranking. So he's got 12 players in the top 21 in the world. Scottie Scheffler is 21st in the world. Jordan Spieth, Tony Finau, Harris English, Daniel Berger, Xander Schauffele, Scottie Scheffler. Like, I mean, anybody would take those six players in any team. It was probably a hard choice he had with Kevin Na, possibly, Webb Simpson, possibly. But phenomenal team on the rankings. I think he's just went down the rankings. Webb Simpson may have just not played quite as well in the FedEx. He hasn't played quite as well the last 4 or 5 weeks. But phenomenal team. It's going to be probably on paper one of the strongest teams that America has ever assembled. It's few rookies. It's a young team. A lot of these kids have played high school golf together, tour golf together. It's going to be a difficult challenge for our captain, Padraig Harrington. But look, we've seen and witnessed what's happened in previous Ryder Cups. It's over 3 days. It's a lot of things involved. Partnerships have to be made up. Weather has to be played through. Pressure. So it's a wonderful team in paper, but let's just see when the gun goes off in the end of September and see what it all brings.
Yeah, so from a European perspective, Paul Casey, Tommy Fleetwood, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, all confirmed. Four more qualifiers by Sunday evening and then three captains' picks. Now, the strong suggestion is that Ian Poulter and Sergio Garcia will be two of those three picks. Now, if that is the case and it goes wrong, it's a very difficult situation for Padraig Harrington to be in, having ignored players who perhaps are in far better form but don't have that Ryder Cup pedigree.
I mean, a lot of people have asked me, this is going to be one of the hardest decisions Padraig Harrington is ever going to make in his life. I mean, personally, I wouldn't leave behind Poulter and I wouldn't leave behind Sergio. I think that both players have a lot of experience playing on the world stage, especially Ryder Cups. There's not going to be a lot of spectators from a European standpoint, even though it's not too far from Chicago. So hopefully there could be a lot of Irish will go from Chicago and follow Rory and Shane and bring that through to the rest of the team. I think Poulter has probably played very consistent golf, especially in the States. He's up for it. It's a difficult pick, but I think it's one that Padraig probably has to make. Sergio won earlier on, I think last November. He's played quite well the last 3 or 4 weeks. He's not winning, but He's a very strong player, and I think he will probably be able to partner anybody on the team. Likewise, Poulter. The other two picks, Damien, I wrecked my head the last 2 or 3 days. I think a lot of it's down to how Wentworth goes. I think Stenson, possibly, he's played well the last few weeks in Europe. If he plays well this week, could get a chance to get a pick. The other one, I really and truthfully, I can't put my head around. I think a lot of it depends on how this week goes.
Okay,
there's
we'll
a
have
lot
to
of players that aren't in form, and there's a lot of players that are in form. So it's going to be a difficult pick for Padraig on Monday.
Momentum is going to play a big role. Ramey, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for being with us. Ramey Burns, former European Tour professional, with us there chatting about the big golf stories of the day. We're going to chat soccer after the break.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on football.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. We're going to reflect somewhat on events from the Aviva Stadium last night. The Republic of Ireland coming from behind, leaving it late, 3 minutes from time to secure that draw against Serbia in Group A of qualification towards the 2022 World Cup. Ireland second from bottom in the table, 2 points from 5 games, a point ahead of Azerbaijan. Portugal on top with 13 points from their 5 games, 2 points clear of Serbia, with Luxembourg back on 6 points with a game in hand. To be joined by former Republic of Ireland striker David Connolly and joined as well by regular RTE soccer analyst and coach at Galway United, Lisa Fallon. David, to start with yourself, what are your main reflections, or were you impressed with what you saw from Ireland last night, or what are the main things that you took away from the game?
I mean, look, I think the important thing was we didn't get beat. I mean, that was absolutely massive for us, that goal. And the urgency, you know, I think the crowd did play a part. I know Liam Brady said that, and I'd probably agree. You know, they were helped by that. We rode our luck at times. You know, obviously Gavin was brilliant in goal. But I think the other thing to look at is, I look back right to when he changed to playing a back five, right, which was against Serbia in March. And he's only kind of had like 7-8 games now playing this shape. And, you know, there is some sort of little shoots of recovery, right? And also a lot of the stuff, the mistakes they're making are you can work on. You can really work on the training ground. And I remember talking to Lisa as well. I think it was before the Portugal game, saying, how I had a bit of hope for Stephen because, you know, the players that he had, how we might get a result. And I don't think anything's really changed. And like I say, I think that the mistakes they're making, you can work on it, but you need time on the training ground. And look, he's had 3 games in 6 days, no time whatsoever. But some of the things they're doing are a little bit naive, and I think they could just help themselves a little bit. And as great as Gavin played, a lot of the issue started when Gavin had the ball at his feet. You know, we did some great stuff too, but I think a lot of it we can work on. I do. Yeah.
Lisa, I know you were at the game last night as a supporter. For as much as you can ever watch a game and not be analytical in your mindset, but there is this feeling that there was a real message to the FAI and a real message to people from the crowd last night that we're here to support this team, to support this manager, and we as a fan base like what we see.
Hi, yeah, I absolutely agree. I went last night as a fan. I was a fan of the team long before I was ever a coach or an analyst. And certainly it was lovely to go back in that capacity with my little boy last night. And I mean, it was the only way I can describe it is that the mood and the atmosphere, I haven't felt that in a long time in the Aviva Stadium. I felt there was a genuine connect between the fans and the team and an understanding of where we're at. And that for me was a really important thing because, you know, I think there is if there's an understanding, then you can manage expectation. It's if there's no understanding, you have to exceed expectations. And I felt, you know, what was disappointing about, you know, we had come from the Portugal game, which was, you know, endeavour and, you know, blood and guts. And, you know, there was purpose to the team and it was heroic in parts. And then the ultimate deflation because of little things that cost us. And, you know, I agree with David in the point that there's things that have crept in that can be worked on and can be. And I think, you know, against Azerbaijan, we saw just a lack of pressure from the team, whether it was, you know, maybe a lowering of expectation in terms of the opposition that we were facing or the mindset or whatever it was. I think, you know, there was something, you know, the lack of pressure in the team was worrying against Azerbaijan. But the first few minutes of the game last night, it really set the tone. The first, you know, the press was really good and that ignited the crowd because what Irish teams love is just for their team number one to just work hard and put in what you have. And if that's not enough against a better team, that'll be okay. Mm. But I think there was genuinely a connect last night. There was a more purposeful urgency to the team in and out of possession. Yes, their backs were against the wall and there were errors in the performance, but I do feel, and I definitely felt leaving the ground, a sense of hope. I did. And I think, you know, there was a lovely mood amongst the supporters and it was great to get the goal. So what was important last night was that you get a result as a result of the performance. And that's potentially been missing. That you're getting performances and not getting results. I don't care what anybody says. At international level, it is always about the result. That's why fans pay money. That is why sponsors sponsor games. That is why players aspire to being a senior international. Because when a player comes in to represent their country, it is always to win. Mm. And but only ever to win.
Lisa, having consumed the various arguments pro-Kenny, anti-Kenny, everything else that's gone on over the last couple of weeks, when we look at the performance, was the atmosphere and that connect between the team as important to Stephen Kenny last night as the end result was? Because it did give out this message that, you know, the grassroots, the hardcores, the people that are there, irrespective of how the team are doing, obviously have an affection and an affinity with what this project is.
Yes, because I think people who work on the ground in Irish football understand what the challenges are because they've been the ones that have suffered the problems in Irish football for the last number of decade anyway, and probably a bit longer. But they understand what can be done with the right resources and the right culture. And that's what people right now in Irish football need more than anything is hope and a vision. And the vision that Stephen Kenny portrays is the one that everyone in this country wants, because we want a future for young Irish players. We don't, you know, the whole Brexit thing has changed the landscape. You don't want Irish players going to the UK or going to other clubs and more professional leagues and a higher level of the game for a pittance. Irish football needs the value for what it produces and for the work that goes into these teams. And it's about time that people in Irish football put a value on Irish football and what it is and the work that goes in. Largely from volunteers, I might add, but very good and very highly qualified volunteers in this country. And that too is, it's another conversation for another day, but that also has to change. But I think, you know, if you look at the best performers or the standout performers in that team last night, under another manager, they probably wouldn't have been on the pitch, the younger players. And now those players are the players that all the kids in Ireland are talking about today.
Yeah, and David, on that, and I know through your work with TalkSport and other, you know, you do a lot of championship games, you do a lot of what's perceived or what's labelled the lower leagues in England. And there is this fixation, and it's understandable that we don't have a flood of Premier League players as we may have had in the past. But it's evident that we have an awful lot of guys who are on the verge of breaking into first teams or who are playing in really competitive Championship, League One in particular, you know, that Saturday-Tuesday cycle, that the talent is there, but perhaps isn't the one that's being beamed into our living rooms by Sky or BT every Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, look, that you know, that's probably the case. I mean, if you look at, say Gavin as an example, right? I was trying to compare when I broke through, and I remember I broke through around the same time as the likes of Kev Kilbane and Shay Given. I think we all made our debuts around the same time, similar age to what Gavin is. And, you know, obviously you don't know how your career is going to go, right? But obviously Shay's career went, you know, and Shay had an incredible career. Now, what is there to stop Gavin really having a similar career? Well, probably playing, you know, playing is the key one, right? Getting in. He's not going to do that at Man City, but he'll certainly do that at Portsmouth, right? And it hasn't held him back playing for Ireland, which is the key thing. You know, but when you're a goalkeeper, you need to play. He, you know, Stephen can't be playing Gavin every international when, you know, he's not playing at Man City. That's going to be difficult. But he'll get game time at Portsmouth for sure. And then for some of the other lads, you know, I think Adam Eder has got a lot of attributes that you can work with. You know, the main one would be he's got to get hold of the ball for us. He's a willing runner, but when it comes up to him, he's got to link it and hold it, because we're not a great counter-attacking team, you know. So he's got to get hold of that ball. I thought the subs have done well. You know, I thought the subs, whenever Stephen's made subs, you know, by and large, they've worked. Horgan, when he come on against Azerbaijan, Callum Robinson, if Callum's fit, that's another strength. You know, the back three, I think, is a work in progress. I think it's better now Duffy's fit. So there's loads of reasons for optimism. But as I said at the start, you know, all the lads, they're all young. They will play. Callum will get more game time at Anderlecht. You know, Malumbi, etc. They'll all improve, right? They'll be better for this. And we're getting harder to beat, although we're not scoring goals. But by the same token, we've got to kind of cut the chat of lurching from Stephen Kenny to Sam Allardyce. I mean, that is just, you know, that is just hysteria, media hysteria, which no one really pays attention to. The lads don't. And I think the pleasing thing, just to finish off, was I saw a couple of things in the Azerbaijan game I didn't like. Like the ball went over Matt Doherty's head and he sort of looked around as if to say, ah, you know, This is what I'm playing with. I was thinking, oh, I never had that feeling when I was with Ireland, when we had loads of elite players and we'd have a few stragglers from the lower leagues like myself or whatever. I never felt I wasn't on their level. And as long as those lads are really good with the lads that are still trying to get to that level, and I saw that the other night against Serbia, that there was a good team spirit and a unity, you know, that there's no hierarchy there. The Duffies and the Colemans are bringing on the other younger lads, you know, because you can't do it with four or five players playing at the Premier League. You can't. That, you know, the body language has got to be good, you know, and I saw that against Serbia, and I thought, and that was pleasing.
David, can I just ask you, like, I'm thinking back on your career, and obviously you'd have played under a manager who was a legend within Irish football. You then played under a manager who had a phenomenal underage career and was very much loved by League of Ireland people. And then you played under a former international legend who didn't have any managerial experience at all. So you've got the full collection in many ways. How big a battle, or how much time does it take for a manager like Stephen Kenny, who perhaps isn't at the forefront of the minds of an awful lot of these players initially, to win a dressing room over? Or is that a completely irrelevant conversation or an irrelevant narrative around this?
No. I think. Look, you do have to win dressing rooms over, and you win that over, one, obviously with what you say and what you do, but also how you implement it. And you know, that's why I was looking, especially at the likes of Matt Doherty in the Azerbaijan game. You know, when a ball come in the box and it went over his head, and he turned around as if to say, well, that's not good enough. I was thinking, well, hang on, now that should be coming from within the dressing room, right? But your coach, your manager, the lads have got to respect him, knowing that the information they're giving out, whether it's how they set up to shape the formation, how they're playing, whether they're winning it high, pressing low, you know, mid block, low block, whatever the tactics they set out to get a result, they believe in what the manager's saying. You know, now what you don't want is, you don't want a manager to doff to the players, well, if you think you should stay here, you stay here. When the ball's here, what do you think? The best players learn. When they go away, they're learning. And you hope that's what Stephen's doing. He's still obviously able to impart his knowledge until your Duffys and your Colemans, yeah, you want their experience and everything. But you know, he's telling them, and they're learning off him. That's how it's got to be. You can't be going away international manager and he's a step below your club manager.
Okay,
that's when it's wrong.
Lisa, just very briefly to finish, we obviously have Azerbaijan away in October, and then the double header against Portugal at home and Luxembourg away in November. Is it time just universally for this conversation around Stephen Kenny's future just to be put to bed and just let them get on with the job in hand? And if that's the case, is it time for the FAI top brass to come out and just back the man and explain the project that's in place, or the plan that's in place?
Yeah, look, I think the FAI and Stephen Kenny, between them, will know what the expectations were for him. And they're the only ones that really, that I guess, will know whether or not those expectations have been met, because obviously Stephen has said it was always about 2024. And I'm not, you know, that was probably fresh to the public arena, if that is the case. So I think, you know, that's their conversation to have. In the meantime, I think it's really important that Ireland just focus on the game, because I think you can focus, you can have a big picture vision, but when it comes to game time, it always has to be about winning the game. You have to zoom in to the game and to try and win the game, and to get the detail right to win the game. And yes, there might be imperfections within the performance that have to be worked on, but I still believe that at international football level, senior international level, when you come to game time, it should always be about executing the game plan and the strategies in line with your philosophy. But winning the game has to be important.
Okay, and there's three games left to try and turn that around. Lisa, thanks for being with us. David Connolly as well, thanks for your time. Much more to come in the programme. We're going to look ahead to Sunday's Camogie All-Ireland Finals after this.
FM. Game on 2FM. With Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on. GAA.
So the Men's Hurling Championship have had their day. Ladies Football have had their day. And this week, the Men's Football Championship and the Camogie Championship will have their big days at Croke Park. A really busy afternoon. The Premier Junior match between Armagh, Wexford, set for 12 o'clock. The intermediate final between Antrim and Kilkenny at 2. And then the senior final between Cork and Galway, set for 4:15. And looking ahead to it, delighted to be joined by former Cork captain Aoife Murray and Galway's Aisling Connolly. Ladies, good evening to you both. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good evening.
It's good to talk to you about that. I hope you've been primed now. I'm looking for a Pat Spillane, Sean Cavan, a big Barney of a row here now to...
We're going head to head.
You've been fed the raw steak and wound up, so we're good to go. Aoife, can I just, from a Cork perspective, Are we talking this week about a real coming of age performance, hopefully, because the turnover in bodies from the team that you led in 2018 to the final in 2021, how significant a sideshow is that?
I wouldn't give it a huge amount of consideration, to be honest. I know my own brother is playing that tune, but I would look at it back to, say, even 2015, when I think the last time we would have played against each other in the final. And even just looking at those numbers, Cork would have 7 plus Orla Cronin, so that would have been 8 from that 15, and Galway have 9. So there actually isn't a huge difference between that first 50, take the first 15. So, you know, there isn't a huge difference going back to the last time we played. I still would say there's a lot of All-Irelands in that first 15 of the Cork team. And I would like to think that, listen, you know, I'm gone 2 seasons. I'm surprised we're even talking about me, to be honest. So I think certainly it's absolutely their moment, and they have more than enough experience and talent on their side to give somebody a good rattle.
Yeah, and then, you know, Aisling, we can look at it from a Galway perspective. You can counter the experience of having been there last year and having won 2 years ago, or you can look and talk about, is there a burden to come back and win again? And, you know, you can frame these matches in whatever way you want.
Yeah, exactly. So Galway are going for their third final in a row, having won in 2019. And lost out narrowly to Kilkenny last year by 3 points. And I know that is really hurting Galway. Last year, they were hoping to do 2 in a row, go back-to-back, but that wasn't the case. So they are coming into this, you know, final, and they're, you know, they're mad for road, but they're not taking it lightly, because Cork, you know, as Aoife said, despite them losing a couple of their key players like Jim O'Connor, Breach Corkery, Rena Buckley, the likes, Aoife Murray herself, over the last couple of years, like, they've had, they're a young team, and they're young girls, the likes of Saoirse McCarthy, you know, Laura Tracy, Ciara O'Sullivan, they've really stood up to the mark and have really solidified their place on the team and really added to the strength and depth of Cork. But yeah, you're right, Galway, you could look at it from an experience point of view, and that's what they'll bring to the table, whereas Cork will bring, you know, fresh legs, youth, and that to the final on Sunday.
Aisling, how big a bonus, not just in terms of what she brings as a player, but Dervla Higgins' inclusion this weekend, or likely inclusion this weekend, the fact that she is available, and, you know, we have to remember referees are human and people will make mistakes, but that wrong has been righted in advance of the biggest game of the year.
Yeah, and isn't it great that it has been righted, because you're absolutely right, there is, you know, the referees have a very hard job to do, they can only see so much, and it was an error, but luckily and the right decision has been made. So Dervla Higgins, you know, from the Athenry Club woman, is a big player for Galway, and, you know, she's tenacious and she's a great tackler and she's a great man marker as well, so it's great boost for Galway to have her back, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see who she is on now against Cork. But on the other side of it, you have Orla Cronin, who I believe we're still waiting to see if she is going to be overturned. It's looking like the decision will be held, so that's going to be a bit of a blow to Cork, I imagine.
Yeah, the suggestions all are that it has been upheld. Aoife, overall, how finely balanced a final should we expect?
I suppose, look, to be honest, it's I would have been more positive if I felt that Orla Cronin's card would be overturned. I know it's great for Galway and the right decision was made for Dervla Higgins. It still doesn't hide the fact the wrong person got sent off in an All-Ireland semi-final. And in fairness to Ray Kelly, he took the advice of his umpires and went with it. But the fact is, Galway have got away with a red card, and Cork are now facing Sunday with a red card, which there's been multiple reports out that... I think it took about 3 days for the report to come. Cork only got a page or two of the report, etc. Apparently it was down as an accidental strike, but I understand it's been held up. So a bit of a mess, and a massive mess for Cork, to be honest, and a massive distraction for them going into Sunday. And I think I said it last week that the appointment of the referee was going to be one of the big points for the final. Liz Dempsey has a massive job on her shoulders. And interestingly as well, it's interesting to see the two semi-final referees who both made errors, Ray Kelly and John Dermody, are both on the official team as well for Sunday. So look, I think they're going to have a massive say, and hopefully that say will be little to nothing and letting the games go.
But I presume from a Cork perspective, though, do you make a decision early in the week to not ignore the Orla Cronin situation, but I presume your team is effectively picked early in the week, and then if she's available, then you've got a decision to make rather than leaving it until the last minute?
Yeah, I would say that if you got the report within 24 hours, and if it's the fact that they didn't get it for 48 hours, they had a training session last Tuesday night, so the whole panel would have been there. You know, Orla Cronin would have been training, just like everybody else. I still would say it's a distraction. Look, the players are professional enough, obviously, in the amateur game to get on with it. But nevertheless, when you have lost certain experience, and I would certainly look at the difference between the sub-benches of both of Galway and Cork, and I don't think Cork could have... I don't think it's a great plus for Cork Sunday losing Orla Cronin.
Aisling, in all the years of presenting programmes like this, I've never known anyone to tip against their own county. So I won't ask you who you think is going to win. But what I'll ask you instead is, what's the key to a Galway win then on Sunday?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, Carrie Dolan, you know, they're excellent free taker. Niece of Trace Maher, the legendary Camogie player for Galway, who's selector on the team. She missed the semi-final, and you know, free takers in this day and age, as we see across both codes of hurling and football, are crucial. And you know, the semi-final they weren't, you know, Ailish O'Reilly, etc., who took a few frees. They're not as accurate as Carrie Dolan, so I think that's going to be a massive bonus. If Carrie starts for Galway. If Galway are to win, Galway need to get the ball in low and fast into the full forward line, who are very lethal and are goal-getters, Siobhan and Orla McGrath, sisters, and Ailish O'Reilly. And I'd also say Niamh Kilkenny is, you know, a huge player. Cork will be monitoring her and tracking her and, you know, trying to nullify her. And she is a big day player, having got player of the match in the 2019 All-Ireland Final and numerous All-Stars, probably one of the most recognised, you know, Camogie players in the country. But if she plays well, Galway play well. And you'd have to say that Aoife Donoghue is, you know, on form, having won the GPA Player of the Month for August. So I think the full forward line, Aoife Donoghue and Niamh Kilkenny are going to be key to Galway. Now, in saying that, Cork's back defensive unit were extremely impressive in the semi-final. You know, I was really impressed with you know, Laura Tracy, Laura Hayes, and Hannah Looney, the half-back line in particular. They really were, you know, they really worked and hunted in packs. And, you know, they really recycled the ball. They were composed and really kind of, you know, used the ball and moved it through the lines out. So it's going to be a very interesting game. But I do think those full forward line, the free taker Carrie Dolan and Niamh Kilkenny are going to be key if Galway are going to win on Sunday.
OK, I'm starting to get stuck for time. But Aoife, the greatest source of confidence then from a Cork perspective, where does that come for you?
It's 50-50, okay. to be honest. I think if you compare both on paper, it pains me to say this because I would love nothing more for Linda Collins to go up those steps on Sunday. But looking at it from paper, from, you know, the 27 on Galway's team sheet from the semi-final versus the 26, which looks like it's going to be 25 on the Cork perspective, I do think it's Galway's All-Ireland to lose.
OK, and very, very quickly, Aoife, I'll come to you with this first. The winner of the intermediate final between Antrim and Kilkenny will be...
I'm going to go Antrim.
Okay. Do you want to expand why?
I'm going to go on Antrim just simply because I actually think Northern teams, when they get to Croke Park, I think they really excel. I think it's going to be a really, really close game, and both of them they actually were in the same group, I think, and not a whole lot between them. I think just point difference. Antrim have put up a big score, so listen, I'm just... Okay. I family up in the north, so it's half family here as well why I'm going for Antrim.
Okay, well, that's a good reason as well. And Aisling, the Premier Junior game between Armagh and Wexford.
Yeah, so Armagh are current holders, but Wexford are league champions. So it's going to be hard, but I think Aoife has a good point there about the northern teams, and they're very tenacious and they're very physical, and their spirit is uncanny. So I will go with Armagh to win back-to-back titles.
We have it all on tape. Ladies, enjoy the weekend. Thanks so much for being with us. It's great to get your views. Aoife Murray and Aisling Connolly with us there, looking ahead to the Camogie finals at the weekend. We're going to chat Central American soccer after the break.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Get back on track after summer with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet range. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
We're going to finish with soccer, and I think a lot of people will be aware of the incident which took place between Brazil and Argentina. Their World Cup qualifier abandoned when Brazilian health officials looked to basically order a few of the Argentines off the field. As it stands, the Brazilian Football Confederation have complained to FIFA and have moved to block a number of players. Edison, Gabriel Jesus from Manchester City, Alisson, Fabinho and Roberto Firmino of Liverpool, Fred at Man United, Thiago Silva at Chelsea and Rafinha at Leeds from playing this weekend. Mexico, Paraguay and Chile are also invoking similar measures. Let's get the story behind this from Tim Vickery, who joins us from Brazil. I suppose the easiest place to start is, what is the FIFA rule at the centre of all of this?
That for FIFA dates, those dates that are set aside for international team matches, there is an obligation on clubs to release their players. And if clubs don't release their players, they leave themselves open to sanctions.
Now, it was a catch-22 situation for a lot of the Premier League clubs, or certainly that's how it's been viewed on this side of the Atlantic, that I think Jurgen Klopp put it very, very well, that if Alisson, Fabinho or Firmino had headed off to play for Brazil, they not only would have to do quarantine, but they would have to do quarantine in an airport hotel where they would lose muscle mass and lose fitness and everything else. So people seem to think the Premier League clubs have put together quite a credible argument, but obviously there's a severe level of dissatisfaction amongst the confederations at play.
Yeah, and the problem here is trying to plough ahead with a fixture of global games, and World Cup qualification in South America is a global competition because the players are coming back from all over. Trying to do that in the middle of a pandemic when you're behind schedule. From the moment that South America decided to go ahead with the Copa America in June and July, which was a very controversial competition, switched to Brazil at the last minute. It wasn't even a regular Copa America. It was an extra Copa America. From the moment that it decided to plough ahead with that Copa America, you knew there were going to be problems because it left South America with 12 rounds still to be played of World Cup qualifiers and not enough FIFA dates in order to fit all of those games in. No margin for error. Now, FIFA bent over backwards to South America on two occasions. There's an extra FIFA date that was set up at the end of January, and also the FIFA dates of this month and next month were extended from two games to three games, meaning that rather than ending on Tuesday as usual, they will end on Thursday night, making it impossible for the players to get back and play for their clubs the following weekend. So the noses of the European clubs were put out of joint. Even without this specific problem in the UK of quarantine, of this red zone thing. But once South America embarked on that path, we were really looking at trying to cram 3 litres into a bottle that can only hold two. And I think it was clear that something was going to go wrong.
But this was flagged well in advance. I think, again, not to keep going back to Liverpool and Klopp, but he was certainly the most vocal of the lot. And obviously, I think the situation around Mo Salah and Egypt for their qualifiers started the whole debate. So is there an issue here of closing the stable door after the horse has bolted? Is this just simple optics or politics at play, or why were the federations not somewhat more proactive in trying to get this sorted when it became apparent that the British government wasn't for moving in terms of exemptions?
Because everything is being improvised at the last moment without time and without planning. And we saw that on Sunday in São Paulo. Now, you can't blame the Europeans for what happened there. You know, the game between Brazil and Argentina that was interrupted after 5 minutes and 10 seconds by the invasion of the pitch by members of Brazil's health sanitation authority. So we got ourselves in a situation where no one wants to give way. It's a situation that requires some give and take but no one wants to give and everyone wants to take. The South American national teams have a calendar where in 10 months from the start of last June to the end of next March, there's 21 international games. And that's a lot of football. That's putting half a domestic club season on top of the club season that they're already playing. So there are such demands put on the players by their clubs, by their national teams. I feel very sorry for the players who are caught in the middle of this tug of war.
But is the issue or is the resolution to all this now going to be a case of, like, Gianni Infantino has already come out and been very critical of the instance that we bore witness to at the weekend. But is this now going to come down to a power struggle between the big clubs or international football and which side of the fence FIFA ultimately see the greater benefit for them in being aligned to?
Well, I would hope because there is one situation here which transcends football, which is the quarantine requirement. And as it stands, from the point of view of the Premier League clubs, if this sanction remains and they can't use their players for 5 days, it's still a result, isn't it? Because the alternative, as you said there, was 10 days in a hotel, which is not only the time, it's the time that they're not training. So if they have to take a hit of 5 days during which time the players can train normally, well, that's a deal that they'll take again and again and again. What really needs to happen is for everyone to sit down a table around a table and try and thrash out some kind of compromise. But it needs some give and take. I wonder, and I have to say I have a dog in this fight, I wonder if these quarantine requirements are necessary for fully vaccinated people.
Yeah.
My dog in this fight is it's been nearly 2 years since I've been back to see my mum, who's now 84. So I wonder if, and surely there could be flexibility there. I know that might be a difficult sell for public opinion if an exception is only made for players. But I wonder if this quarantine requirement is necessary for all vaccinated people. So there's some give and take there. If that is taken away, I think it becomes much, much easier to reach some kind of compromise just within football.
Yeah, you see, the problem is you're putting forward an eminently sensible resolution, which often isn't what people bow to in the world of elite sport, particularly when association football. Tim, it's always a great experience to hear you share your expertise. I hope you're closer to a return to your homeland than the last visit you had. Wish you well. Thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Tim Vickery joining us from Brazil. Apologies to Tara Stewart. We are over on time, as we always tend to be. Thank you to Ronan Lawler, who produced Dermot O'Brien as our broadcast coordinator. From Damien O'Mara, until tomorrow at 7, good night.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Get back on track after summer with Green Firm's high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.